The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week, during the discussion, the topic of emotions came up. So I thought I would talk a little bit about emotions today, and you know, thinking about it, this may go on for a couple weeks. We'll see how long it goes on. I think the initial question that came up for people, or a couple people mentioned, was around recognizing emotions. You know, actually understanding what their emotions are. And I definitely had this consideration when I was first starting my meditation practice. I think I was pretty much an emotional illiterate. I couldn't really identify or recognize my emotions very well. I remember on one retreat, I was in an interview with Gil, and he was asking me, I can't even remember how the question was phrased, but something about, I think it was first he said something about the feelings. What are the feelings? And I started describing, oh, pressure, tightness, tension. And he rephrased the question, and I can't remember what the second question was. And then finally, the third, and again, I pointed to the physicality. And finally he said, well, what is the emotion? And it was like, oh, I see what you're asking. And I had no idea what the emotion was that was going on. It was kind of startling to me that he had to ask me three times and that I didn't get it. So after that, I started doing some kind of education of myself around emotions. And one of the ways that I did this was to create a list. And so that's one of the things I'm going to talk about today. So just to start, I'm going to just kind of give the terrain of emotions, because with emotions, I mean, it's not simply recognizing them, that it's very helpful to recognize them with our mindfulness practice, because often when emotions aren't clearly recognized, they tend to catch us. We kind of, in a way, are identified with them when we're not really recognizing that an emotion is happening. We're more tied up with it than we are simply recognizing it. And so the process of recognizing emotions is very helpful in our mindfulness practice, because they can pull us away from the present moment into our thoughts, particularly. The recognition, the beginning to recognize what the emotions are, is really helpful. So I'd like to talk about the terrain, but the terrain of emotions, particularly with respect to how we can pay attention to them with mindfulness. So just to begin, thinking about emotions, There are, you know, from the perspective of what we can pay attention to around emotions, there's three basic aspects that are in our experience, and they include the emotion itself, the mood or tone in the mind, the actual emotion, the mental phenomenon of the emotion itself. Then there is the thoughts or the story, the narrative around the emotion. That's different than the emotion itself. Often those two can get really tightly coupled, that it's almost, there's not so much of a distinction for us between the thoughts and the emotion itself, but they are two, they're different things. You can have the feeling of fear without thinking about what you are afraid of. So that kind of maybe gives a flavor of the difference between the thoughts about an emotion and the emotion itself. And then there is the impact that that emotional experience has on the body. So with respect to emotions in particular, the body and mind are very tightly coupled. The brain really sends a lot of signals through particularly this part of the body when there's particularly strong emotions. So there is a physical impact of the emotion. And those physical sensations can also be part of our, what we pay attention to. So that's kind of the terrain. So let's just explore one emotion, for example, fear. You know, the feeling of fear often is a sense, you know, in the mind. It's hard to describe the mood or the tone, the emotional state itself. But generally, we can just simply know that fear is happening. I mean, like in a raw example, if you happen to not see a car coming and you step out into the street and that car blasts its horn, you know, there's a kind of a raw feeling of, you know, of terror or something, you know, get me out of here kind of feeling. So there's that feeling in the mind. Then there's also in the body, of course, probably a rush of adrenaline, a lot of heart palpitation, maybe some tension, tingling through the body, all kinds of physical sensations that result from that experience. And then probably in that particular situation, afterwards, thoughts would start, wow, that was close, or I didn't see that car coming, or how could that car be coming so fast? I know I looked that direction, and that car wasn't there. You know, so there would be some thoughts associated with this emotion also. So that's the basic terrain of emotions. That is, you know, kind of just in terms of what we can pay attention to in our experience. And I'm going to talk later about the how of paying attention to emotions, and that actually might be what drifts into next week. So right now, first I want to kind of talk about the actual recognition of emotion, how we can start to get familiar with the emotions that we experience. And a good place to start this process is with kind of your habitual familiar emotions, the ones that you tend to go through more frequently. So I'm going to talk a little about what is called in Buddhist psychology kind of the temperaments, that there are kind of different temperaments of people that tend to gravitate towards these temperaments. And I'm just going to talk about three of them in the moment. They're the kind of the three basic categories of people who have a kind of a motivating temperament of greed, a motivating temperament of delusion, or a motivating temperament of aversion. So most of us, well, we all have all three of these going on almost all the time. I mean, we're kind of motivated by greed, aversion, and delusion in many of our actions. But we all tend to have one of these that is a little more predominant. Not everybody. I mean, some people are more balanced in this area. But many people have a kind of a favorite flavor in their experience. And a way to begin to explore this for yourself is an exercise that I think I first learned from Jack Kornfield, and I think he's written it in one of his books. So right now, let's just do this as a kind of an exercise. So close your eyes and imagine yourself walking into, or see if you can remember walking into some place for the first time. So, you know, construct something in your mind of going into a room for the first time and get a sense of the room, you know, what it looks like, whether there are people there or not, whether there's a decoration or not. Just get a sense of the room. And then what is it, what's your reaction in that room? Is it are you tend to drawn to things that you like about the room? Or is your first impression things that you don't like about the room? Or is your impression one of kind of, what's going on here? How do I fit in? So you can open your eyes. So does that, did you get any kind of a sense for yourself about that? Do you have a sense when you walk into some place, whether your kind of initial response is, oh, this room isn't shaped very nicely. I wish they had more art on the walls. It's a little boring in here. Or is it, wow, what nice flowers. I like the light the way it comes in through those windows. Or is it, how do I fit in? What's going on? I'm a little confused about what I'm supposed to do. So did each of you get a sense of that for yourself? So if you have that, the sense of being drawn to things that you like, then you might be of the greedy temperament. If you have the sense of kind of initially orienting to things that you want to fix or change or that you don't like, you might be of the aversive temperament. And if you have the sense of being a little confused, you might be one of the deluded temperament, of you know, the delusion is the strong aspect. Now, as I said, we all have all three of these, but we tend to have a way that we orient first to experience. So given these kind of orientations, there are kind of a range of emotions that go with each of those temperaments, a range of possibly familiar emotions that go with each of those temperaments. So the emotions that come out of greed are things like excitement, eagerness, wanting, attachment, and on a slightly more skewed side, deceit, vanity, pride. Emotions that tend to come out of aversion, of that pushing away, that not liking, anger, fear, irritation, envy, things like that. And if you tend to be a little confused of not connecting so much, of having that sense of what's happening, what's going on here, those emotions might be things like confusion, spaciness, boredom, agitation, worry, uncertainty, and dullness. So those are just a few of kind of the flavors. And so one thing in terms of recognizing emotions is to, if you can have a sense, if you have a sense of what your temperament is, start to familiarize yourself with the emotions that are associated with that temperament and see if those are familiar emotions for you. And a way to play with this, and this is what I did when I created this list, is I basically went to the internet and I went to the dictionary and to the thesaurus. And I started creating lists of emotions. This was quite a while ago, but I just checked yesterday afternoon and this morning, and Wikipedia actually has a web page, List of Emotions. That's not a bad list, actually. So, you know, that's a place to begin. You know, they have, where is it? I printed it out. It's like 6 pages. You know, they set it up first with basic emotions and opposites of those. So their basic emotions, this particular person's basic emotions were joy, trust, fear, surprise, sadness, disgust, anger, and anticipation. It doesn't seem to cover confusion. So this is a different breakdown of emotions. And then it goes on to, you know, combining emotions. So, you know, a more complex emotion, the combining of like anticipation and joy, they're saying is optimism. So that, you know, there's just this interesting to refer to this. And one of the instructions my teacher gave me around becoming an emotional literate was to create a list of emotions and have it with me, carry it around with me, and then from time to time throughout the day actually read through the list and see if there were emotions that seem to resonate. So this takes a little bit of research because, you know, we have some idea about particular emotions. You know, the names, the words seem to call up something for us, but at the same time it can be helpful to actually go to the dictionary, read the definitions, and get a sense of, you know, kind of finer discrimination between things. So, for instance, this morning while I was thinking about this, I thought, okay, well, here's a kind of a pair of emotions that I think seem very close, jealousy and envy. So what's the distinction between them? So I had my own idea about that. What are some of your thoughts about it? Is there a distinction for you between jealousy and envy? Oh, yeah, let's use the microphones. We don't have to do this for long, but throw these out.
I'm just guessing, but maybe jealousy is more of an immediate wanting or coveting what somebody else has, and maybe envy maybe is a more deeper longing for what that person has, and maybe a more long-term harboring of the covetedness of what somebody else has.
So there's a sense for you that the envy is a stronger emotion than jealousy. Huh? Joel? No.
Okay. So the front page of the National Enquirer would probably have jealousy versus envy. That's my sense. Maybe. So it's kind of more immediate, more emotional, more kind of it's charged. Envy, I kind of agree with Sophia. It's a little bit more, you know, maybe long term. I'm envious of their, you know, whatever, wealth, their meditation practice, their whatever, whatever. Jealousy would be more like the emotional charge. Yeah, I was jealous that, you know, she didn't talk to me at the party, whatever, you know.
Okay.
I'm jealous that she didn't talk to me and talk to that guy and was so involved with that guy and she didn't even talk with me, something like that. Or I got jealous or whatever and she was with him all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so,
one more. Did you have one?
Hi. So for me, it's quite confusing as well, and I have an assumption of what both are. But what resonates right now is envy is something I'm very unfamiliar with and seems something very bad, the word, maybe because I'm so unfamiliar with the word, never heard it. Whereas jealous, growing up, you hear, I'm so jealous, I'm so jealous. Oh, look at you, it's something that I've heard more often. Mm-hmm. However, has a bad connotation, so when I hear it.
Envy or both?
Jealous.
Jealous,
Envy is something I have not heard often.
Okay.
So it's very much in the dark for me, and it seems worse than jealous in my mind.
part of that...
Like I'm envious, oh, that sounds bad. And jealous is something, you know, growing up you hear, especially young people, often just say, you're supposed to accept it, but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, and I think you're right that the use of language... tunes our sense of it. So, yeah, if it's used frequently, it becomes more, oh, yeah, that happens all the time.
Right.
So I was actually surprised when I read the dictionary definitions because I had a similar sense I thought that jealousy was around wanting what somebody else had and that envy had a more harsh spin to it. And here's the actual dictionary definitions. This is from a 1965 dictionary, and my guess is it's possible the definitions might be updated because the term for jealous, well, I'll talk about it a little bit afterwards. So here, this is a great place to do this kind of research. There's some dictionaries, this dictionary that I have, with particular words, in the synonym section, doesn't simply list the synonyms, it actually describes the fineness of distinction between the synonyms. So I particularly like this dictionary for that purpose. So here it says, it gives three synonyms, envious, covetous, and jealous, and describes the distinction between them. It says they all describe a person who begrudges the possessions of another. An envious man not only wishes to see the other deprived of his possession, but also wishes to obtain it for himself. So that's a kind of a strong emotion. And in looking up the word itself, envy, a feeling of resentment or discontent over another's superior attainments, endowments of possessions. So there's that resentment feeling. So it's a kind of a negative, it's an aversive kind of feeling. Although you want those things, it's partly about depriving the other person of them. Then jealous, it says, a covetous person is greedy, but usually not malicious. He wishes only to have as much as others without wishing to see them deprived. And then jealous, this is what surprised me. A jealous person is greatly concerned about what he or she owns or claims and fears to see it pass on out of his grasp. A jealous person is greatly concerned about what he or she owns or claims and fears to see it pass from their grasp. It's attachment. Exactly. It's attachment and fear to see it pass away. So think about that with respect to, like relationship. Often this is used in terms of relationship. You know, you're jealous of your husband or wife thinking they might go away. And that's, I think, where the original definition is. I think, now other definitions would include wanting to have what somebody else has. Because that's how it's used in common language right now. But I found it very interesting to go to this and see the kind of fine gratings around this emotion. You know, it's like we don't have to call them envy or covetousness or jealous, but there are these different qualities in our hearts and minds around wanting to keep what we have, fear of seeing it in somebody else's possession, basically. I mean, I think that's part of what jealousy is kind of the, something you feel you own, you see somebody else has it. And it's like, no, that's mine, that kind of thing. Yeah, the guarding. The envy being the really wanting to have something at somebody else's expense. And the covetousness just wanting to have the same as, I just want to have what everybody else has, kind of thing. But not particularly wanting them to not have it. So anyway, to explore, to actually do some research around emotions, particularly ones in the territory that you experience. Find out what the finer gradations are. Read the words in the dictionary. Now, this sounds a little bit strange coming from a meditation teacher, I'm sure. go into the words. Think about the concepts. But on the other hand, in just a sec, go ahead and give it to Marcia. We have been trained through words. Our language is kind of the kind of outer structure of our brain. And that's how we experience a lot of things. And so if we can begin to, through words, get in touch with these distinctions and then start to explore, what's actually going on while I'm feeling this feeling? Then we can start to get familiar with the actuality of the emotion and not just, you know, think about things, be thinking about it. So does that make sense? So I find it interesting to do this kind of research, particularly if you feel like you need some support in understanding what your emotions actually are. So I also did on the internet just to see if I could find, because I have this great dictionary and often I go to it for this kind of synonym distinction. But I did check on the internet, so I just did internet. I did an internet search with jealous, envy, something. What was the third? I didn't use that word. I just did jealous, envy, and then it was something like meaning, you know, something like that. And I got a page that was the top of the list was jealous, envious, suspicious, and related words. And it, you know, defined them. So it used the internet. The internet can be very helpful with this kind of exploration.
Just Google it.
Yeah, just Google it. Marcia, sorry.
So wouldn't this also just be like the list of defilements? Couldn't you go through that avenue? Because there's like many, many... You know, those lists are pretty long also.
I've definitely gone through, and not all emotions are defilements. That's one thing I want to say. And I do want to talk about a whole set of wholesome emotions that will come out later. But right now I am focusing on what would be called the defilements, the emotions that come out of greed, aversion, and delusion. And, you know, there's actually don't know of a lot of lists of defilements.
I think that there is.
There's the hindrances.
Steve Armstrong seems to.
It maybe came out of the Visuddhimagga. I did look up in the Visuddhimagga around these three personality types, and they gave these states. They said, you know, okay, greed, they tend to have deceit, pride, vanity, aversion. They tend to be angry, envious, domineering, disparaging, have avarice. The deluded type tends to be agitated, worried, dull, uncertain. So I did find that there, but I haven't, you know, didn't see an actual list. There's a set of 52, I think it's 52, mental factors that combine together in a mind state to create emotion or to create the whole mind state. So that might be what you're thinking about. So the emotions, I don't know of a place actually, I mean, it's possible that there is one where like emotions are listed in the Buddhist. Now, wholesome emotions are much more listed. I actually, you know, I went through a bunch of lists and came up with a kind of a set of wholesome emotions that we'll go through a little bit later. So learning to recognize emotions, using this emotion list, doing some research, kind of understanding the fine distinctions, that it can be helpful. Another place to begin, yeah, Bud, go ahead and pass the mic over to Bud.
So are we headed towards a bodily distinction between these emotions? Are we headed towards the bodily difference or the experiential difference between envy and jealousy in the body?
Well, it may not. I mean, this is one of the interesting pieces. I mean, that the emotion has all three parts. And there are times where, you know, the emotional feeling, I think actually it was John Travis that I first heard this from. You know, he was doing a kind of an exploration of emotion in his body and began discovering that widely different emotions can have very similar bodily experience. And he said for himself, anger and lust felt very much the same in his body. So the emotion itself is composed of more than the body, and the distinction of what it is will also include the feeling in the mind and the thoughts that are around it. So it's not necessarily just coming to the bodily distinction, but to begin to understand the kind of whole package. And then, as you point out, you know, coming into the body is a very helpful way to be present for the emotions. And I'll talk about that more as we get into the how of the paying attention to the emotions. So another good place, and again, coming from the avenue of our thinking mind, another thing that can help us begin to recognize emotions when we're not so familiar with emotions is the story. So not to give a lot of weight to the story, but if you're confused about what the emotion is, if you start listening to what you're saying to yourself, you might hear the words that give you the indication what the emotion is. So for myself, I had a kind of a surprise around this. I was on a retreat and I felt like I just was experiencing doubt, a lot of doubt. And that was all I thought I was feeling. And it was like, well, I don't know about this. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. And at one point, I decided to ask a question about this. In the hall, we had a time in the morning when we could ask questions. And so I was kind of framing my question while the teacher said a few words, trying to figure out, okay, how do I want to say this? And as I began framing the question, the first two words of every sentence were, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. It's like, maybe this isn't doubt. Maybe this is fear. And I never got a chance to ask the question, but I then started noticing fear all over the place. And the doubt pretty much disappeared. It was kind of like, I think maybe the fear was kind of underneath the doubt. And that kind of exploration of, okay, well, what is it that I want to ask? And paying attention to the words that I was using to create the question gave me a clue. So, you know, getting familiar with the thoughts around emotions, getting familiar with the story. Now this one, you know, let's just take a couple. You know, for instance, what's the story of anger? Anybody? But in words.
Absence of love.
In, you know, kind of like what you might say to yourself.
Absence of love.
Absence of love.
I think anger signifies a lack of acceptance of the way things are.
But is that what you'd say to yourself?
No,
I'm not accepting the way things are.
I'm mad,
okay, I'm mad at that person.
They weren't very nice.
They weren't nice.
Hurt by that person.
I was hurt. I'm sorry?
Why me?
They done me wrong. I don't understand. Let's see, somewhere I have a... Right, yep. So anger. Like, they shouldn't have done that. I'm right, you're wrong. Right, but I'm talking about the story here. That's what we're trying to. What you say to yourself is a way to begin to recognize the emotion.
Oh, you're saying the clues.
Yes.
To see how to track it back.
Yes. Yeah. So start paying attention to what you're saying, can give you a clue as to the emotion.
It's like resisting. It's like they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't be like
that. Right. So fear, what's the story of fear?
I'm not equipped to handle this.
What's going to happen? Sorry?
Insecurity.
What if? What if? Yes, that's a good one. What if? You know, if you hear yourself saying, what if, what if, what if? Did you have something? Bodily experience, but again, that's another avenue of beginning to recognize the emotion. I'm trying to go through the avenue of thoughts at the moment. Yeah, vulnerability. So again, is that a word? But again, that's the feeling. That's the feeling.
This is not a good idea.
This is not a good idea. Okay, how about the story of impatience? Get on with it. Should have happened yesterday.
Which one is it?
Impatience.
It's a lousy driver. This is going too slow.
This is going too slow. This isn't worth my time. I can't wait to get this over with. Okay, how about...
Can I tell a 30-second story? I was actually at a Jack Kornfield retreat up in Spirit Rock, and someone came in late, got a speeding ticket to try to rush to that thing. It's just like it was a set of things. I want to get that full meditation.
Yeah. Okay, let's. I've been focusing on the stories of some emotions that are kind of in the aversive camp. Let's see if we can come up with some stories from the other side. So, how about pride? What's the story of pride?
I'm good at that.
Sorry?
You know who I am.
Do you know who I am? A great one. How about the story of admiration?
I'm glad I know you.
Admire what you're doing.
Admire what you're doing. Yeah?
See me?
That would be for pride. What about admiration? Yeah. That person is my hero. So this exploration also, again, using mindfulness, when you're experiencing emotion, start to keep track. You know, use the mindfulness to track the thought, the tenor, the tone, the words that can give you a clue about some of the what the emotion is. So recognizing the story. Sometimes it can be, the thoughts actually, and this is kind of moving in more to paying attention to the body. Because sometimes the thoughts that are going on actually have leapt off of the emotion and are far enough from the emotion that you're not really spinning around the kind of root cause of the emotion. So, for instance, one day I was driving my car, and the mind was just going crazy. It was like it was on caffeine or something. You know, it was just thinking madly about, oh, I got to do this, and I got to do that, and I got to do that, and I got to tell that person that, and I got to make sure that person knows that. It's like, whoa! You know, the mind was kind of in this caffeinated experience. It's like, okay, just come back. I was driving, so come back to the hands on the steering wheel.
Driving fast?
No. I remember exactly where I was driving, because this was quite a revelation.
Did you translate into your driving?
No, it didn't. I was driving okay, and hands on the steering wheel. And then it would happen again, and okay, hands on the steering wheel. And at some point, it's like the thoughts were kind of planning. They were projecting forward. They were that kind of thought, and particularly seemed concerned about making sure one particular person knew something. And so, you know, it seemed like if I had to say, I would have said, you know, something like, worry, anxiety, something.
Fear.
along that line, based on those thoughts. But instead of just paying attention to the thoughts at that point, it's like, okay, you know, I kind of like, well, what's happening here? Kind of opened up to just the space of the mind and the body, just what's happening? And what I discovered was that I was really happy. I was happy. And that happiness, because of clinging to that happiness, projected, was like, oh, in order to keep this and make sure everybody understands how I can stay in this state, I basically lost the happiness. Because the mind projected forward into, how can I keep this? And it was so far from happiness that I was not, I didn't recognize it. And at that point I began to realize, I said to myself, I talk myself out of happiness. So I caught it quick enough to see the feeling, the actual feeling, you know, that was kind of the source of those thoughts. So sometimes the thoughts can actually mask the emotion. So you use the thoughts lightly. So you can use them to help you a little bit, but also have respect for the power of thoughts to proliferate and go crazy, because they can take you miles away from what's actually going on. So if you're catching it relatively quickly, you know, you can probably sense the connection between the thoughts and the emotions. So any other comments or thoughts? Yeah. A microphone? Where's the mic?
I'm wondering if we...
Turn it on.
Green. Okay. I'm wondering if we might give any time to excitement.
Oh, thinking about the story of excitement?
But also, for me, excitement and fear, it seems like there's a lot of overlap at times in it. Intertangling. And
yeah, you know, I think excitement does have a very agitated quality to it. You know, it for me, there is a kind of similarity to, I wouldn't say so full-blown fear, but kind of like what you I don't know what the right word would be.
Rush.
Anticipation. But the kind of butterfly feeling, the nervous feeling can come with excitement, as well as with fear. Yeah, Marcia.
This Jack Kornfield once said that fear is excitement holding its breath.
That's an interesting definition. So any other? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When we talked about the going into the room, what I went back to was when I was going into the first grade for the first time and walking into this big assembly room, and excitement, anticipation, and a lot of positive projection into that new experience.
Uh-huh.
Because I hadn't been to kindergarten. I had not had any of this kind of experience. And then I just thought, that's really the way I anticipate most when I come into a new experience. And I was another one of those little triggers. And I think that's been helpful for me my whole life. Now, where that came from, I don't know.
Right. Well, you don't need to worry about that part.
Yeah. it was delightful to see that is sort of part of who I am.
Yeah, yeah. So getting familiar with those emotions around excitement, anticipation, eagerness. For you, that's probably a good exploration, a good way to move into this exploration around emotions, to get familiar with that.
Thank you.
That area.
Yeah, this is not necessarily Buddhist, but it kind of moves me. And I'm sure many of you have heard of Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins. He has a book called Awakening the Giant Within. It's also a CD, and he has a whole chapter. He talks about transformational vocabulary, the words we use. So, for instance, an example might be, I was furious at the driver for cutting me off, versus I was angry, versus I was annoyed, versus I was peeved.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting in relationship to here, and maybe is the way we might cling based on the words we use. If I keep saying I was furious, I'm angry, it starts kind of enveloping me, becoming a part of myself. If I use the word annoyed or peeved, it seems a little less charged and maybe a little less attachment to a state of being or a state of who I am.
There's some truth to that. I think, you know, there are words that are along the gradation, you know, like irritation, annoyance, frustration, anger, rage. Right. You know, so getting familiar with the range is good. And I think you're right that if we do use words that are more charged than we're actually feeling, it can tend to charge us up even more.
Yeah, so I think it'd be good to be accurate, somewhat accurate. If the person really bothered you, you wouldn't want to just say slightly annoyed, but you don't want to use something too charged.
Yes, I think that's part of the exploration of the emotion, too. So this is where I found the thesaurus helpful. You know, okay, look up anger and find what are a lot of synonyms for anger. You know, there you get the kind of the range from irritation to rage. This is the last one, then I want to go on to another.
Okay. I just have a difficult time with all of this, just from obviously my experience, what I've observed. And in this, if we're all on the same page and we're all defining and doing the homework, it works. But in a society, if you want to help others as well as yourself, I find that words are very difficult because I don't believe people really look them up. They define what they're feeling and attach a word. I don't know if it comes when we're young. So we say anger, and anger a certain way. The best way I can describe it is, for example, love. My definition of love has changed tremendously from what I started. For me, love used to be such an intense thing. It needed to be. And if it wasn't, no longer did I love the person. And with time, I don't know how I learned it, but with my experience and looking into it, I found that love is almost the complete opposite of what I used to see.
Uh-huh.
So peace of mind and the feeling I get in my body and what I go through in my life, I like it more pleasantly,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to all these things. But nevertheless, for no matter what age, I have, you know, someone close to me that defines love as jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take that away. I mean, what don't you want peace of mind? Well, peace of mind, that means you don't care, you're indifferent. And it doesn't serve to argue, but they have their definition. So how do we live in a society and help to understand one another and create more peace and less suffering?
So, you know, the first part of it is exploring our own experience. And as you said, that now for you, the love includes more of the sense of peace of mind. And you know, a love that includes jealousy includes this clinging and actually has a tightness and tension around it. So there is a suffering around that kind of love. So, you know, we can't teach others. We can support their opening a little bit, but like you say, you know, we can't fix other people. We can't. But what we can do is begin to have the conversation with them, especially if it's somebody close to you. Well, what do you mean by love? You know, so beginning to have that exploration. Because we do all have very different words. And if we're talking, you know, we may be talking like this. So it's really helpful to understand that we don't use words the same way. So the exploration for yourself is to begin to understand what you feel. And it's not just the words, it's the feelings. I mean, that's where we're going. We're going into the feelings as a way of being able to stay connected with them in the present moment and not get swept away by them, not get caught by all the stories and thoughts and he should have done and they should have said and I'm right, they're wrong, you know, all of that that creates suffering for ourselves. So for ourselves, this exploration is around looking at ways to meet our experience. Working with others, then we have to, using that knowledge that we've gained about ourselves, gently begin to explore with others about what they mean. So it's a process. It can't happen real quickly. I mean, you've seen in your own mind probably how slow the transformation was from your initial definition of love to what you understand now. And you've been exploring it, thinking about it. Most people don't explore this stuff. or work on it. So yeah, it's a sad thing. And I think, you know, we cannot force others to make this exploration. But we can take an interest. And actually that interest, I think, is a, you know, if we take an interest, rather than coming from a place of well, I'm right about this definition of love and you're wrong, you know, kind of like, okay, let's explore this. What do you mean by love? What do I mean by love? And have it be a conversation of interest, and that brings some mindfulness into the equation. And that you know, that can be a way to be perhaps encourage someone to begin to take an interest in exploring themselves. But not a kind of a forceful way or a direct way, but by you taking an interest. Yeah.
The example you'd like to see.
Yeah. Exactly. So, oh goodness, we only have 6 minutes. Okay. Well, I was going to talk about wholesome emotions, but let's save that for next week. Let's see, what else about this? And also, well, since we only have 5 minutes, let's just keep going with questions. There's more topics to explore, so I want to just put those out there. There's the list of, there's the wholesome emotions and learning, familiarizing oneself with the all of those beautiful qualities, like a generosity, tranquility, kindness, joy, peace, happiness, truthfulness, patience. So there's many of those in many of the Buddhist lists. And so there's a whole exploration around that side of the emotional realm as well. And then there's also the topic of, with respect to these difficult emotions particularly, learning how to turn the attention towards them and explore them. And actually, that to me feels like the most logical thing to talk about next week. And then maybe the following week go on to the beautiful, the wholesome emotions. Does that sound good? That kind of trajectory?
I'd like to say something about language.
Use the mic.
Where are we? It seems like language forms me, and I form language when, like as you're saying, as you start to understand yourself. So I just think that's one of the reasons that sexual language, sexism, is so dangerous, because it not only, well, we've grown up with it. I grew up with it for so many years, more than probably anybody here, but it forms us, the way we talk and how other people talk to us. So knowing language and to not always take the first thing that comes to examine is really, really helpful.
Yes.
And not only in our spiritual walk, well, everything's a spiritual walk, so, I mean, it's helpful everywhere.
Yes, it is. And so this is beginning, again, you know, we can bring mindfulness to our thoughts. So not only how we talk to ourselves, but how we talk to others. So, you know, taking care in the language. You know, the whole territory of mindful speech, and taking care in how you speak. And that goes for how you speak to yourself as well. It's a huge, a huge area of exploration.
Is it important in your growth spiritually to experience every emotion? Is that...
I wouldn't say that. I think it's important to experience the emotions that are coming up for you in the moment. And it's important to cultivate these emotions that support us on the path. The emotions of generosity, of kindness, of compassion, of equanimity, of tranquility. There's so many of those emotions and ways to cultivate those emotions. Typically, we think about emotions as being these reactive kind of emotions. And a lot of us aren't quite as familiar with the territory or the terrain of emotions that come as the mind lets go of greed, aversion, and delusion. Those, it is more important to begin to experience in the trajectory of our emotional, spiritual development. But to, is it important for everybody to experience rage? It's important to experience and know it if it happens to you. I wouldn't necessarily say that you have to have that experience. So, does that...
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's it. I'm curious to know if one knows.
Is it?
Again, for example, jealousy, you said that. I often say I've never felt this experience, but somehow I know it, how it would be, how it experienced. It's a very ugly feeling. But perhaps I felt anger or these other things. But am I under a delusion, like you say, that perhaps I have felt jealousy and not know?
Well, that's the thing to be clear about. That, you know, and that's partly this exploration, that there may be emotions that you have felt, like envy, you know, of wanting to deprive somebody of their possession so that you could have it. And, you know, if you come upon that emotion, then it's important to experience it. But to create it or construct it, I would say that's not the point. But to clearly recognize the emotions that you are having, that is an important part of the spiritual path. Yeah. Yeah. Well, but there's somebody who's using the hearing assisted device, and this is the last one because it's sometimes when it's yellow it works.
Just thinking that in what you were saying about jealousy and maybe you have experienced or have not experienced, it's almost like that's the thought about having the emotion as opposed to actually experiencing the emotion. That's the judgment we put on that jealousy has such negative connotations and I don't want to be a jealous person. And that's more of a mental construct that we're determining that it's bad and all that, but maybe we haven't actually felt it, but that's the thought that we put on it.
Right. So, I mean, we do tend to categorize emotions as good and bad. Yeah. And the point in mindfulness is to let go of that categorization and come into the experience. It doesn't matter what the emotion is. We're not trying to get rid of them. We're trying to understand them. And that's what I'll talk about next week, is that exploration of understanding these difficult emotions. Okay. Well, thank you for the lively discussion.